Welcome to 167 Hours Beyond Sunday, a companion podcast to the sermons of Crossroads Christian Church in Gray, Tennessee, where we try to go beyond the message and talk about what life looks like in the 167 hours we're not in church a week. I'm your host, my name's Ryan Evans, and today I'm joined by our administrative minister, Larry Albrecht. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. It's a beautiful day out because it's summer in November right now.
Welcome to East Tennessee, exactly. Where you never know what the weather's going to be.
Because I had frost on our plants the other day, and now it's all sunny and warm, and not sure what to do with that.
It makes me reflect on recently we were in a staff meeting talking about weather for Candy Carnival, because, you know, we were about a week out, and it was predicting thunderstorms, and it was just this kind of, like, laughable thing, like, we don't know what the weather's going to be like in a week.
It's East Tennessee.
No, we don't predict weather here.
That's right.
Not well. So a lot of people hear the title administrative minister and have no idea what it means, which isn't helped by the fact that, like, honestly, a lot of what you do is very behind the scenes at Crossroads. Yeah. For those who may not know you, can you kind of give us a glimpse at what you do at Crossroads? And I love asking this question because it's kind of a joke on staff, too.
It really is. It really is. Nobody knows what I do here. They try to explain my job, and it's like, well, he does this one thing, but like 1,000 other things do. The best way to understand what I do here, I was thinking about this, and it's, you have to kind of think about it chronologically. So I started at Crossroads in 2007. I was hired as the discipleship minister. I came out of the counseling world and had been a minister before that. So they hired me to come in and do discipleship, Sunday school classes, and small groups. And then they wanted me to do some counseling as well, some pastoral counseling as part of that. And so that's what I did for like the first 6 months I was at Crossroads. Mm-hmm. And then one day, a couple of ministers were working on a computer trying to get it fixed.
Yep.
And I know just enough about IT I was able to go in and fix the computer. And from then on, I was in charge of almost all IT things here at the church, which is exactly how things like that happen. But counseling had become a big part of what I was doing. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of need, especially for addiction counseling. So we started the Celebrate Recovery program here at Crossroads, which I oversee. Yeah. It's now Choose Recovery. And in that, there was such a need for specialized care in certain areas. So we started a divorce care program here at the church. And every time we have that class, it is absolutely full. So we've helped a couple hundred people through CR and through divorce care. And so that's part of what I do throughout the week. And then we had an administrative minister for a little while, and he left, and there was kind of this leadership vacuum. And somehow I inherited all those responsibilities. So a big part of what I do now is I oversee the staff. So I'm the chief cat herder. I try to get everybody to do stuff here.
Bless
at the church.
You.
I do the day-to-day operations of the church. So there's just a lot of day-to-day functions that help keep the doors open, like managing the database, pretty much anything that has to do with technology. So one of my titles is Minister of Technological Wizardry.
Yeah, there you go.
That's one that I have.
So if I was going to simplify this for our audience, like just like there's the Room of Requirement in Harry Potter, basically you're the Minister of Requirement.
Just whatever needs to be done that day. So if it's background checks, I'm your guy. I'll make sure that happens. Oversee our safety program called ALICE, which is about active shooters or intruders here at the church. So that's part of what I do, which means I'm part of the safety ministry. I help out in the facilities ministry whenever they need help. I'm part of the strategic planning team, which is made up of representatives from deacons and elders and staff. I help with the hiring here at the church when we hire people. I'm the staff representative on the finance ministry. And sometimes I just kind of pitch in wherever is needed. So earlier this year, we were playing around with trying to figure out if we could do live streaming.
Yeah.
And we were completely unsuccessful with it. We failed so many times. And then COVID hit. And we had to get good really fast. And you were my partner in that. We were able to get live streaming up and running.
The titles became a joke during that season to a certain degree. Because if you could do it, please come help, basically.
That's exactly what it was, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I, 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 was wondering how long it would take you to answer that question when I wrote
that's
it.
That's not even everything I do. No, that's just kind of an overview.
Yeah, very, very much behind the scenes, which, you know, maybe not the face that everyone gives the credit to, but very worth noting how much you do for our church. Not that you're saying that, but I'll say that. So we're currently in a sermon series called November, and this last Sunday, Curtis preached on No Fear. So I kind of thought it'd be fun as we kind of transition into the topic is to talk about, like, is there a time have you ever, like, experienced irrational fear, either as, like, a child or an adult? Do you have a good story for us, basically?
Oh, yeah. So thinking about that, so what comes to mind first is when I was a kid, my family, you know, growing up, so there's three of us boys that were born pretty close together. And then
sounds like trouble.
And then there's a couple of siblings after that came some years later.
Yeah.
And so us three were pestering my mom to watch this Dracula and Frankenstein movie. And she gave in and let us watch it. And I got so freaked out by it. And I wasn't afraid of Frankenstein because I was pretty sure I could outrun Frankenstein. But Dracula just scared me to no end. So for years, I would sleep with like a blanket wrapped around my neck because I was afraid Dracula was going to come in.
That's awesome.
Irrational, completely irrational. And what made it worse was I lived in Portland, Oregon. So nobody had air conditioning in Portland, Oregon. In the summertime, it'd get really hot and you'd have the windows open, which means Dracula could get in your bedroom way easier.
And I'm sure they didn't make the towel around your neck feel any less hot.
It's 105 degrees out at night and I've got this blanket wrapped around my neck. So
I love that.
That's what irrational stuff does to you.
Yeah. So this also leads me to, okay, I didn't write this and send it to you, but this is one of my most interesting, like, horror movie debates / questions for people. So there are basically two camps of people who are afraid in horror movies. People that are afraid by realistic situations, so movies where basically, like, this could happen in real life, or people who are scared by, like, supernatural things, like The Ring or The Grudge. I'm curious, which camp do you fall into? Are you more scared of supernatural things that aren't realistic, or realistic things that could happen in real life?
For me, it's realistic things that could happen in real life. You know, that would scare me more.
See, this is a weird, I'm the opposite direction, because in realistic movies, I can almost always assess the situation and be like, I could handle this way better than current protagonist who's being a dum-dum and going back into the house. It's like the little girl crawling out of your TV. Like, what are you going to do about that? So now I've sidetracked us. I'm a horrible host. You know, it's funny though, and this is going to be more my fault than your fault in this moment. I was, of all the people I've interviewed, the one I'm worried most about going long with, even over Ryan Hughes, is you. Because when you and I talk, a 5-minute conversation sometimes morphs into like an hour.
It does. It does. So, yeah, there should be a warning sign on my office door. That says, if you're going to start a conversation, plan to stay a while.
Yeah. So I think a lot of us think of fear as kind of a negative thing. You know, you hear a lot of Christian sayings like faith over fear, you know, and I think a lot of us really have kind of characterized fear as it's completely bad, but honestly, it's a survival tool and can be helpful. So I thought, you know, since you have some counseling expertise, could you kind of share some of the positive aspects of the emotion fear before we get into kind of the more spiritual side?
Yeah, I truly believe in that faith over fear aspect of things. Josh Wandel, and that was a big, that was like the slogan of his ministry, was that he was going to have faith over fear. And it wasn't that fear didn't exist. It was that faith was greater than fear. Mm-hmm. And so I truly believe in that. There's also this kind of side thing that comes out sometimes that you shouldn't have any fear, like you said. And if you have fear, it's sinful. Mm-hmm. And that's not true at all. In fact, fear is natural. It's a stress response.
Yeah.
So we all respond to fear in some particular way. So when it's healthy, when it's the good kind of fear, it's when we see the car coming, right? And then that information gets taken in by our eyes and our ears. It gets processed. It goes to the amygdala. You know, it gets processed in there. And then it goes out to the hypothalamus, who then tells your body, hey, look, you need to pump a bunch of adrenaline in here. Get that blood pressure going. And then you jump out of the way of the car. You know, fear has that role when it's healthy. It keeps us from doing things that are unsafe, dangerous, or hurtful.
Yeah.
And so fear actually has a place. It has an element. So that's the fight, flight response that when fear happens. Then there's the fight response. This is when you see first responders. I work with a lot of first responders. I'm a chaplain with the police department. So I see these guys, men and women, do this all the time where they run into dangerous situations.
Yeah.
So danger would make most of us run away. That's the flight. And for them, it's the fight. They're going to go in and they're going to protect people. They're going to run into that burning building. Mm-hmm. They run up to the vehicle crash, whatever it is they need to do to help somebody. And so that's a stress response.
Yeah.
And then there's the freeze response. And this is where we get caught a lot of times where it's so overwhelming, we just freeze. We stop in place. And fear in our lives can actually create that freeze response. So we don't make a change. We constantly live in fear when we're just responding to that stressor in that unhealthy freeze way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was reading a book recently, and it was talking about emotional and inhibiting or things that will kind of prevent you from processing an emotion. And that's exactly what it is. Fear is not an unhealthy thing, but if you don't process your fear and move on, if you just stay in it or get stuck in it, or even sometimes denying it, all of those are unhealthy ways to respond to it. And I think we have to be careful, especially as adults. Like my tendency with a lot of emotions are to like view them as negative things. And that's why I asked that question. It's the same thing with anger or other emotions that could have bad consequences if we don't process them and handle them correctly.
Oh yeah.
So the listener out there who has fear, don't feel guilty about that. That is a healthy thing, unless it is dominating you and controlling you and you cannot process it and move on.
Absolutely.
Then we need to deal with it. So Curtis said Sunday, and I think this is absolutely true, one of the greatest fears that we face in our life is uncertainty. So why do you think that is? And have you ever been a time in your life that you've experienced that?
So when it comes to uncertainty, we like to be in control. Human beings like to be in control. So much so that we're in denial about how much control we actually have.
Oh, yeah.
So when it comes to uncertainty, we're like, well, we don't want to deal with this. We're going to try to control it any way possible.
Yeah.
And in recovery ministries, the first thing we learn is that we're actually powerless over things, whether it's our addiction or depression or anxiety, we're powerless over it. And once we give up our perceived control is when healing actually begins to happen. And so when there's uncertainty in our lives, we give up the fact that we don't have control over it. And that allows us to face it with God in community, and it really changes lives, and people begin to get healthy and strong. The very first lesson in our recovery program is on denial, and it actually pushes back against the idea that we have control.
So basically, I'm trying to understand that. So in order to have healthy recovery, we have to basically relinquish control from ourselves, admit that we don't have control. And then, but I want to key in on that. You're saying that you have to give control both to God and to community.
Yeah.
Which one of those sounds easier right off the bat? In my brain, I think it is always easy for me to trust God. And maybe that's because maybe that's the one that's easier for us to pretend like that we can control in our brains.
Right.
Like, God, I trust God because God agrees with me in my brain. Community is quite a bit harder.
Right.
And it's a little tougher with people.
That's a trust that gets earned, though, because in the community part, you give people permission to call you on your stuff, and just say, hey, look, you're being irrational about that. That fear is that's an unfounded fear, or you're really not processing this well. You're thinking about this all wrong, and so it's that accountability piece. That really helps keep us in check. And then also, I'm going to tell you this: a lot of people have a hard time giving God control over anything.
Yeah,
because they don't. They have some trust issues with God, and so it's really hard for them to do that. So yeah, it could be really hard in both those areas. And so we take, it takes a year to go through our entire program to have every lesson and visit every conversation. We always come back to that idea of we're powerless over our addictions, our hurts, our habits, our hangups, and we're powerless over those things, and we really need to have help. So even though it's like a year to go through this, we're constantly revisiting that idea.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it makes, I mean, I will admit regularly that's like one of the hardest things in my faith is to give control to God. And that's an easy thing to say, but like in theory, but even those of us who think we're really good at it, very often it seems like the God in our brain does everything the way we think that he should.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I think it's Curtis preached this recently, but it's true. Praying to God that his will be done, not yeah. our will, is a lot harder. Yeah. That the line between, you know, the accountability you're talking about, which is important. We all need accountability in our lives. If you're an island and you're the only one who's smart and the only one who sees things the right way, you're the problem. I'm just going to go ahead and say that to you, listener. And by the way, I'm saying that to Ryan. Ryan has been that person, me, myself, not Ryan Hughes.
We all get that way, yeah.
And I think we have to be careful. Patrick Mitchell, this upcoming Sunday, is preaching on no judging.
Yeah.
And I do not envy him trying to share kind of where the balance between judging and accountability are.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tricky game that we have to play as Christians
and
in community.
We like to parse those words out a little bit and saying, look, I don't want to take somebody else's podcast, but you know,
yeah.
you shouldn't judge me. Well, there's accountability. And as brothers and sisters in Christ, we have that.
I think, listener, make sure you pay attention this upcoming Sunday because I think it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to next week's conversation. So after, you know, talking about this a little bit, Curtis shared the story of, you know, Jesus and disciples going out on a boat. You know, the disciples freaking out because the storms are going nuts and Jesus calming the waters while the disciples are scared. And he actually shared this quote from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and it says this. It says, "When Christ is in the boat, a storm always comes up. The world tries with all its evil powers to get hold of him, to destroy him along with his disciples. It hates him and rises against him. But this does not surprise us, since Christ is the crucified one, and there is no way to life for a Christian without being crucified." And this idea, you know, this thing that Bonhoeffer is positing flies in the face of a lot of common Christian perspective that God's going to keep us safe out of trouble. He's going to provide everything we need. So how do you, Larry, think we as Christians have kind of missed the point that persecution comes with the territory?
First, let me just say, I love this account with Jesus, by the way. I love when Jesus mm-hmm. is kind of takes what you would consider a normal response and it gives a Jesus response, which is so much better. I'm going to learn from Jesus in some way here. So if you imagine this, he's in the boat, he is asleep, there is a storm, it is a storm that's getting ready to capsize them. They're everybody's afraid, and they wake Jesus up, and he's just like, "What are you doing?
Yeah,
why are you doing this to me?" And then he turns to the storm and he yells at the storm. He just yells at it and he says, "Stop, be quiet," you know,
mm-hmm.
which is interestingly the same thing he says in a couple chapters earlier to the demon that he encounters.
Yeah.
He yells, same exact words.
That's really
interesting. Yells at him and he says, you know, be quiet. That shows that Jesus has power over the spiritual world and he has powers over the temporal world.
Yeah.
And so this is an important distinction about Jesus here. So I just think that's an incredible interaction that happens. And Bonhoeffer's pointing out the fact that if we're going to follow Jesus, and Jesus, this is the promise he made us, mm-hmm. the world will persecute you.
Yeah.
The world will hate you because of me. And so he's essentially saying, yeah, you're going to have troubles. And it's going to be scary sometimes. And it's not always going to work out in the way that you think it's going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of the, you know, essentially what Jesus is saying. If you're my follower, expect a lot of this.
Yeah.
Expect a lot of this.
Yeah. I think when we start turning God into like Santa Claus and we think of him as like, oh, if we do good things, then we'll get good presents for Christmas. You know, like very health and wealth gospel mm-hmm. approach to our faith. Whereas we, you know, we just think that God's basically this provider that's just going to make sure nothing bad ever happens to us. The problem with that approach to faith and that perspective on the world is that it will eventually fail you. I mean, there's just no way around it. And also, it's a completely unfair expectation of Jesus and God. Because like you said, yeah, like John 16:33, and Curtis mentioned this Sunday, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble."
Yeah.
but take heart, I have overcome the world.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, you're not through this going through this alone. You're gonna go through it, but you're not gonna go through this alone. That's such a key point to this.
Yeah, it's really easy in the not storm moments to talk like we are confidently. Oh, yeah. But I was, when I was listening to Curtis share this, I really connected with Curtis's point that sometimes it can feel like Jesus is asleep in the boat when things are chaotic and out of control. I think we often find ourselves wondering why God hasn't stepped in. So for you, Larry, what are some things that you do or you reflect on to kind of find comfort during the stormy times?
Well, this whole year has been a storm. Right.
It's a little bit. Yeah.
It has been a storm like we've never faced before.
Yeah.
We when COVID hit, it completely upended the things we were doing here at the church.
Yeah.
We had to adjust and shift very quickly. It's a disruption is what it is. It is something that kind of just breaks everything you rely on and kind of, isolates you from your communities, your ways of processing things. So it's been a really difficult year.
Yeah.
And so we've been facing this storm this entire time. As a staff, we have made decisions. We've all lost our cool at some point during this season. We have yelled at each other, why are you sleeping? Get up. We need help.
Yeah.
We have tried things that have failed miserably. It has been a season that has challenged everything that we know as ministers.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are in November looking back at the entire year, and still we live in this uncertainty moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what the next couple of months are going to look like. We just heard today that there's a vaccine that has a 90% effective rate, which is fantastic if that's what's going to come true. We don't know if that's still going to happen or not.
Yeah.
When is it going to be available? How many more months do we have to go through this? And so we're still in this place of uncertainty. So we're planning from week to week. The COVID numbers have risen in our area. Schools have stopped meeting in next door, and we're trying to keep the church open. We're trying to be safe and be responsible, and so much uncertainty. Every week is uncertainty. And I remember in the beginning we would plan something, and then like the next day it was no longer viable.
Yeah.
So much uncertainty, and what we had to rely on was really, we had to become people of prayer again. That was a huge piece of this. We had to become people of grace.
Yeah.
Because we were going to have to allow those moments where we're just not in our best moments. We don't say the right things. We mess up. We're under a lot of stress.
Yeah.
So we had to allow for a lot more grace. Flexibility has been a big part of this. And remembering the purpose of who the church is. And where God has showed up in this a lot of times in the uncertainty was showing us that, look, there's people you can reach. Even doing virtually, you can reach people you never have reached before. And we did. We were reaching people from all over the United States. We had people from outside the country watching our sermons. First time that we've ever seen something like that happening.
Yeah.
We've got way more of a presence where most people are at right now. And people are searching for churches and answers, and Crossroads is popping up in those searches.
Yeah.
So we've seen God show up. But that was all done out of uncertainty. We just started... Where God was leading us that day is where we were going. And sometimes we had to go with just what God gave us that day.
Yeah. And and even outside of 2020, like stuff's still going to happen. Storms are still going to come. Hard moments are going to come. Even while you were saying all that, it forced me to reflect on the year. So if I looked scared, anxious, happy, confused. That's because I was processing all of the emotions that I think we all had to go through at one point or another.
Exactly.
And I can say this for me, I want to try to be vulnerable because I think I want to make sure our audience hears us as ministry people be vulnerable. Like, there were times I was like on my floor sitting crisscross, like trying to calm down from a panic attack because we as a staff are trying to figure out stuff and we, you know, we're putting together a 1,000-piece puzzle. We have 4 pieces and then a couple of Monopoly bucks because we don't even have the right board game.
Exactly. Nothing looked normal. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I can also say, and this is just an interesting, kind of the first time I think I'm putting this together, because of the disruption and because I've had more time than I think I've ever had to self-reflect and work on stuff, I think my faith has grown more in this season than it has in a long time. Probably 2020 has probably been the biggest faith-growing year for me in my time in ministry, which isn't crazy long. It's just a little over 7 years, nothing super-duper. So I do think it is worth realizing that sometimes, even though the storms are hard, there's a lot that we can learn from them. And sometimes disruption's a good thing, because all the stuff that, you know, like you talked about, as a church, we had a lot of stuff planned and we thought it was super duper important. And at the end of the day, it wasn't nearly as important as we thought it was. And, you know, which is good perspective, but it wasn't fun.
It wasn't fun. It wasn't always optimal. But yet we had Easter, you know, mm-hmm. and we didn't meet in person. And I think we had an incredibly holy time of worship on Easter. We just did it virtually.
Yeah.
And who thought that, you know, if I were to come in 2019 and say, hey, let's do this Easter thing where it's all online, I would have been laughed out of the room. I'd probably lost my job. I was crazy. But yet here we are, and we found it. It was a lot of chaos getting there and trying to figure this out.
It might actually be my favorite Easter I've been a part of, for what it's worth.
And there's some really good Easters here at Crossroads. Mm-hmm. That was just, there were some exceptional moments and some surprising moments in our Easter this past year. It is, we're constantly being challenged by uncertainty. I think even after COVID season gets over, mm-hmm. we'll still be challenged by uncertainty, because the church is not going to be the same.
No.
The world's not going to be the same. Our community is not going to be the same. Mm-hmm. This was a disruption. It doesn't go back to the old normal. We're going to have a new orientation moving forward. And what that looks like, I have no idea. Again, we're just guessing on a lot of stuff still. Yeah. But yeah.
And by the way, listeners, if you're listening to someone who has it all figured out, stop listening to them, because they're full of it. They're just pretending like they know the answers. That's my personal belief. So we're eking up on the end of our time here together, Larry. So I want to end with this question. Do you have any kind of parting thoughts or wisdom on this subject before we kind of wrap up, or any other thoughts that you've had based on our conversation?
So we're talking about fear. Fear is an important feeling. When it's working well and we're using it well, it protects us. That's what it's there for. Mm-hmm. But fear can become like anything. We have too much of it, and it becomes maladaptive. It's bad. It consumes our life. It begins to impact our soul. Fear will be used to separate us from God. And so, in its unhealthy form, fear destroys. Mm-hmm. And so, that's why it's so important for us to address fear, to realize that we're powerless over these things, mm-hmm. and to really. To really put fear in its proper context, addressing those irrational feelings that we have, and then from there, you know, inviting people to speak into our lives and God to speak into our lives about it, and so fear's you know, there's a normal part to it, but there's also a very unhealthy part to it, and we mm-hmm. really have to make sure we balance that.
Yeah, and you know, I'd be remiss, and I'd say this to all people, if you're someone who feels like any emotion is overwhelming you to a point of that you're not processing it well, counseling is an incredibly viable option. Fortunately, it has been kind of destigmatized over time, which is really good. In the same way that you should go get a checkup for your physical body, you should really consider getting a checkup for your mind as well. It's just as much of a place that needs focus and healing and rejuvenation, and there's certainly no problem with that.
Yep. And as Bonhoeffer says, if we're in the boat with Christ, there's going to be a storm that comes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in a storm right now. And then when that one's done, the next storm's coming.
Yeah.
It's just going to have a different name. They'll look a little bit different.
Yeah, for sure. So, well, thank you, Larry, for this conversation. And thank you all who are listening and joining us this week. If you're on iTunes and don't mind, please give us a 5-star rating and maybe a review just so that this podcast keeps getting shared on. And if you want to keep all up with all of Crossroads activities and find more content, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube. You can find us by searching Crossroads Christian. And there's all kinds of content, especially on YouTube, for adults, kids, teenagers, Choose Recovery participants, or folks who are looking for a place to battle addictions, hurts, habits, and hangups of all kinds. We want to provide resourcing for all of you. But more than that, please make the most of the rest of your 167 hours. See you later.